I'm Kev Jackson, and this is the Paul Bunyan Country Outdoors Podcast. The Paul Bunyan Country Outdoors Podcast is sponsored by Visit Bemidji. Find your great moments in Bemidji. And by Northview Bank, helping you find your piece of paradise in Paul Bunyan Country.
Hi, this is Nate Blazing with the Nisswa Guide League, and you're listening to Paul Bunyan Country Outdoors.
Well, hey, it is that time of year. We're in the heart of eel pout season, so I thought I'd get the eel pout kings of Paul Bunyan Country, Jason and Jason, Rylander and Durham. Welcome back, guys.
Are you a king?
Not anymore.
I never thought he was a king.
Thank you. Thanks for having us, Kev. Yes.
Yeah, thanks. Hey. Thanks for opening your studio to our bodies.
Well, I'm happy to do it. And by the way, people, if you're listening, check the social. Jason D, in this case, Tenacious Jason D, came in equipped in eel pout plumage, I guess is the best way to describe it. What in the world? Where in the world did you get that eel pout costume?
I mean, everybody asked that. I have a close friend who is a graphic artist for Target. And so I commissioned him to make this lovely costume that is an eel pout. It's a stuffed eel pout.
Oh, it's epic. He's in here. He's got the gold watch on. He had the gold tennis shoes. I thought they were Trump shoes there for a second.
No.
And I realized it's part of the eel pout costume.
I don't do anything political. And so I'm kind of sad that the Trump shoes are for sale, because now it's going to dilute the effect that these have, these gold shiny babies. But I completed the look with a brown velour tracksuit, because I think that's what a eel pout would wear if it could wear clothes.
Well, I'm glad you chose to wear clothes.
Yeah, I did do that.
I think one of the epic eel pout pictures of all time is Rylander barely clothed in a, what would we call it, a bath of eel pout almost.
Well, I mean, if you just Google eel pout hot tub, it comes up, but I guarantee it wasn't hot.
It was not hot. It was... That's one of the coldest I've ever been.
I could tell.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's how little clothes you had on. Right. And you should have had one of these eel pout costumes, because you would have been warmer and I would have been safer for viewing.
So how much eel pouting have we done so far, guys?
This has been a unique season for sure, in that I haven't fished in general as much as I usually do. Guide trips for the season were definitely down, which was okay. You know, I like time to be able to go out and explore on my own anyway. But in terms of eel pout, it's been a little bit more challenging to get out, but I've put in some time.
And I've only got out a couple of times, and both times on lakes that I went through a resort and drove out, knew I was safe, and just played that card, just mostly because the ice really this season's got me a little nervous. And on some of my favorite eel pout lakes, the ice is very iffy.
Well, the ice has been iffy all year. I mean, how big overall? You mentioned, Jason D, that overall ice fishing's been down for you. You too, Jason?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, been a little bit busier this winter, but I've ice fished way less than I normally have. My son's actually been out a ton, which has been awesome. Good to see him getting into the sport. But he's been going out with Matt Brewer's kid, and just picks him up on the side-by-side, and they're going out to local lakes just off of that. But I'm telling them to, even in the lighter side-by-side, to watch your butt and be safe and check ice and don't go exploring where you maybe don't need to go exploring.
Yeah.
Well, and part of the reason, too, that we haven't been eel pout fishing as much is we're just getting into that period where it gets really good.
Right.
But I think there's a lot of people that don't eel pout fish until we get to March, just because they want to kind of capitalize on that spawn period and when there's an elevation and activity. But you can definitely catch them all winter long. And we've discovered open water, too. But one unique thing from this winter is that we've gotten to help out with a study, another eel pout study, which is so cool to see the DNR take on, because there's so little information about these fish. And next year, starting 2025, there will be a limit to eel pout, which we are incredibly excited to hear. But really, that number that they've chosen is kind of off of what they've gotten as feedback from anglers, mm-hmm. because there's so little information that they've received on these fish. So the DNR is doing a study to try to determine a population estimate, because on any lake, that's really what you need to do for management. And so they've got several different lakes this year, Lake of the Woods, Leech Lake, Bad Medicine, and Gull Lake down by Brainerd, that they were trying to get a population assessment by doing a creel survey. And so the one that's closest to us is Bad Medicine. Well, Bad Medicine and Leech would be Leech, very similar. But in either situation, you know, we've promoted eel pout fishing for a long time. And a lot of people give us credit for it. And really, it wasn't us. It was everybody. There were a lot of people that promoted it. But because of the internet, mm-hmm. really, that's why. Yep. Everybody could see how much fun it was.
Right.
It's one thing to talk about it. It's another to see it. No offense, Radio Kevin.
No.
And anyway, it worked. All of the publicity that's been given to eel pout has worked, and there's more eel pout anglers than ever. And so what we realized is we needed to start promoting the conservation of the fish and the catch and release of the fish and really promoting that part of it. Now, where that has come into play is at these lakes, they have somebody doing a creel survey. Well, in the summer when there's somebody conducting a creel survey, they are traveling in a boat, going from boat to boat, checking on anglers. You know, what have you caught? How many hours have you been out here? It's the same in the winter, except they're not traveling around from angler to angler. They're waiting at the public access, waiting for anglers to check in as they come off the ice. And they're taking fin samples for a genetics study. But the problem is, if people don't keep any fish, then there's no fins for the study. And so that's what they're encountering right now. And that people are being a lot more diligent about the catch and release aspect of it, which is good, but we're still at base level in terms of gaining information on these fish. And you do have to, unfortunately, in some situations, harvest some fish to do that. But I think it's going to be a while until we have accurate information on this unique species.
Okay. So, do you anticipate, could there be a time as the population and the popularity grows, that we actually stock eel pout in lakes?
So that's been something that has come up. In fact, from our local office in the Park Rapids office, it was something that was talked about and discussed, and it got declined by the higher-ups in the DNR. But I like that it's something that at least is being considered. It's on the table. Even just the studies that are being done right now, we're going from a fish that had no limit, none. You could keep as many as you wanted to being reduced to a limit less than our state fish. And that's definitely progress. But again, we don't know how many fish there are in the lake. And so you can't really base management until you get a fairly accurate number of that.
What are you guys hearing any rumors as what they're thinking for a limit?
Yes.
You have? I have not. I know what I sent in on the several surveys, and I went conservative, hoping for the best.
Mm-hmm. Based on
what he's just hinting at, it sounds like it's pretty promising. I would have liked to seen I think 4 eel pout is plenty. Mm-hmm. I also am a firm believer that I don't think they're a very successful spawning fish. I think there's a lot less of them in lakes than most people realize, so I really lean towards the more conservative side to you don't need 10 eel pout.
Right.
And what I've heard is 4. Now, that's not printed in paper, but that's what I've been hearing. And I think,
I like that number.
I think that's a good number. I mean, if you think about it, even though we don't typically eat the belly meat, they have a lot of meat on them. They're big, long fish.
Mm-hmm.
And how much do you need to eat? And eel pout are not a good one to freeze.
they do not freeze well.
Don't do that.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So if you get your eel pout, if you're going to eat it fresh.
And that's the hard. That's one reason that we hardly ever keep them is because you end up getting home at like midnight sometimes. And
I don't want to clean fish at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Cleaning fish, yeah. And then you got to clean, and then you got to cook them.
Right.
And then you're not going to clean up. And somebody's going to be mad at you in the morning because you didn't clean up the mess.
Right.
So so it's just easier to throw them back.
Yeah. So if I'm thinking if we're going to have a 4 eel pout limit, and I just remember, you know, years ago when Ken Bresley was around and, and doing interviews with him about the eel pout festival, and they were tossing 25, 30 of them on the ice, and that's it. It was we're throwing them in the garbage. And now we're looking at a limit of 4, and because we consider them a valuable fish. It's amazing how things change.
Right. Well, even those last few years I was helping with the Eel Pout Fest, I was helping with the tournament side and weighing in the fish. We really pushed catch and release. So guys were bringing them in coolers full of water, and we had a hole drilled out on the ice, and we were letting these things back go. And it was, I mean, from the start of that tournament, from them just getting them out of there and basically wanting waste right there in public to promoting this event and this tournament and then letting the fish back go into leech was a pretty big turn in the 30, 40 years they had that event.
There's a pretty significant shift in terms of train of thought. I mean, because like you say, that tournament went on forever. It was decades long. And it wasn't a conservative event in terms of protecting the fish. It was, let's get as many of these out of the lake as we can. And what a shift even from stopping that event because of the impact it was having on the lake, on the fishery itself, that people got to that point that they realized what we are doing is not okay. And and that's progress.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Wow. So 4 fish, and I'm assuming, at least at first, we're just going to go statewide 4 fish. I mean, as things get more sophisticated and we figure stuff out more, things might change, but
yeah, who knows?
It's just great progress to have a limit, period.
Mille Lacs, you have to immediately release right now because that population is, I mean, they knew that right off. I mean, you talked to people 30, 40 years ago fishing Mille Lacs, they talked about the sun would set, the walleyes would keep biting, and all they could catch is eel pout. Now I hear about 4 or 5 of them that get caught all winter. There's just not the population on Mille Lacs like there used to be.
Are eel pout all over Minnesota, like walleye are all over Minnesota?
No.
No.
Okay.
No.
Very select lakes.
You can get them in southern Minnesota on the Mississippi River. But then I think as far as lakes go, Mille Lacs, there's a couple lakes in my neck of the woods where I grew up. Ottertail still got a little bit of a population, West Battle. But then for the most part, it's those deeper, clearer lakes of northern Minnesota that is home to most of our eel pout population.
So is that what they want, deeper water? I mean, what seems to make eel pout thrive? Do we know?
Well, it's not just deep water. Mm-hmm. The big thing is clean water. And I think that's why those fish are more towards the north. I mean, obviously they need a specific environment to be in. But I've said this so many times when talking about burbot, is they are the canary in the coal mine. That if you have a decline in water quality, that's the first fish that's affected. And so you look at all of these lakes that they're doing these studies on, they are healthy, healthy lakes. And eel pout are a great indication of just the overall health of a lake.
Okay.
If you have eel pout in a lake, it's a healthy body of water.
So talk to me on the eating side. I know you guys throw most of them away, but how good are they, and how do we make them, how do we prepare them?
Kev, do you like hot dogs?
Well, yeah.
Okay, not everybody likes hot dogs. Same goes for eel pout. It's you either like it or you don't.
Right, it's got a very different texture to it than other freshwater fish, where like walleye, northern, when you're panfish, you've got a white flaky meat, where this has got more of a seafood-like texture. So it's more firm. So cooking it, when I first started cooking it, I did the classic boil it in 7-Up or whatever, some sort of soda, and dip it in melted butter and a lot of it, and it's delicious because it's a great excuse to eat butter, right? but I've had it battered and fried. One of the favorite ways I've cooked it is I had a little bit bigger one that I had kept, so the back strap was pretty big and thick. I chunked that up, I par cooked some bacon, wrapped it in bacon, and I grilled it.
Ooh.
You know, just so that meat was done, and par cooking the bacon was important so that the bacon was plenty cooked by the time, because the fish doesn't take long. Mm-mm. And I took that because then it's got a little bit of charcoal flavor, you know, that grill essence to it. And now I got my cholesterol from the bacon instead of the butter, but it was that was a treat. I've also had, popularity. There was very trendy at restaurants for a while. Not too long ago was the lobster mac and cheese.
Oh.
Did the poor man's lobster mac and cheese. I've had it that way too, which isn't
really good.
Wasn't bad at all.
And I've done eel pout linguine, which was great.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, wow. You can do a lobster roll if you want. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's cod. Eel pout is cod. It's freshwater cod.
Yep, they're the only member of the cod family in freshwater.
And so unique because they spawn under the ice. And that's the period that we're getting into right now, where the activity, there's an uptick in activity, they're aggressive, they start to school up. I mean, we always talk about spawn balls when we're talking about eel pout. And they literally get into a twisting, writhing ball of slime. Doesn't that sound
that
exciting?
That sounds nice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, why wouldn't you want to fish these? Come on.
All right, so how do we catch them? What works for you guys?
Oh, I like a big, heavy lure that glows. Matt over there in Cass Lake owns Big Nasty Tackle. He's got a bunch of great products. Gob that up with, if I can get golden shiners, that's pretty ideal for me. Otherwise, sucker minnows or fatheads, whatever I can get for bait. Usually this time of year it gets a little bit trickier to find bait. Setting up on steep breaks, I really like hard bottom and just glow up that lure and hit the bottom and wait for them to show up.
And I've changed my approach a little bit. I used to go the big nasty way, big heavy spoons, heavy jig heads, and pound the bottom with them. But I've started to gravitate towards a little bit smaller baits and lighter. So the one that I've been using is the clam ribbon leech flutter spoon. That's a really light spoon, but it darts all over the place, and it's got a little blade by the treble hook. And just that little bit of flash, I feel like it gets them to commit at the very end when they're chasing the lure and they're just about to bite. And I think it just seals the deal. But I'm not making as much contact with the bottom with that. I'm fishing it more like walleye, like you would jig for walleyes. But it's effective.
Mm-hmm.
But that glow is definitely still advantageous, hugely.
Mm-hmm. So your guy Matt actually makes eel pout lures.
Yeah.
Who'd have ever thought there'd be a business model for that?
Well, and the funny thing is, I got in with that company, a friend of mine, Adam, from down by Baxter. He started making these lures, and he was making them he made them for himself because he liked eel pout fishing. And that was back when there was hardly anybody doing it. And Matt Brewer introduced me to him, and I got introduced to the lures. And then he just got, it was a side business, and he got so dang busy. He's like, I never get to fish anymore. All I'm doing is making lures. And an opportunity to sell to Matt over Cass Lake. He's got the pawn shop
right
there. So that's where they're producing them now and making them. And the time I talked to Matt, he's telling me about, we shipped jigs to Sweden. I got a request for this jig. And they're all over the world. It's pretty cool.
Wow.
Right out of Cass Lake.
It's been really neat, too. Jason and I are both members of some different social media groups that are focused on eel pout. And the one is, what is it called, Burbot Hunters Worldwide. That's always really neat because you get to see people everywhere that are just passionate about them. And it's so cool to see how they fish them in other places. And in general, it's the same, in general. But you might have the depth change a little bit depending on where they're fishing or, some of the...
British Columbia, they're fishing them in the rivers all the time. So there's all very different techniques and tactics. It seems like they're catching a lot more fish during the day, too.
Yeah. But even just like the equipment that they have. I mean, you'll look from somewhere that they'll be using old wooden jiggle sticks and some homemade weird spoon, and they catch fish doing it.
Yep.
You don't have to have a $200 rod and reel combo to go and...
Yep, I'll fish.
Yeah.
No, not at all.
Jason and Jason, Rhinelander and Durham, my guests today. Much more to come with them next.
I'm Jason Durham, the smarter and better looking Jason, and this is Paul Bunyan Country Outdoors.
great moments are experienced when you visit Bemidji.
Explore the outdoors this summer and see what great moments are in store for you when you visit the first city on the Mississippi.
Bemidji features abundant access to the great outdoors with over 400 pristine lakes, perfect for canoeing, paddleboarding, and over 160 miles of trails that run through the northern Minnesota landscape.
Plan your next adventure today at visitbemidji.com.
Great moments in Bemidji.
This is the Paul Bunyan Country Outdoors Podcast, and Mark Harmon from Northview Bank is back. And Mark, for those who are thinking that they'd love to retire to Paul Bunyan Country, how hard is it to find a place?
You know, if you're trying to put this off into the future, a lot of times, you know, lending programs for cabins and bare land and vacation properties, a lot of times they can require up to 35% down. Northview Bank gives borrowers a better option. With good credit score, buyers can qualify for a cabin, cottage, bare land, lake home financing options to make that possibility easy with 10% down. You know, another thing too, you know, when you get into a big city underwriter, they're not going to understand what we see as fairly normal up here. And I'm talking about a cabin that maybe doesn't have electricity, or maybe it has an outhouse. That's hard for somebody in the city to underwrite and really see value in it. Well, we know that that's what people are looking for. A chouse. I didn't even know what a chouse was till I moved up here. You know, we can look at some of these maybe less desirable structures on a piece of property and look past that because we know there's value there because we are local and we understand it. We do lending like this all across North Dakota, South Dakota, Wisconsin, Minnesota, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, whether you're in Lake Country or you're thick in the woods, we're good.
Mark Harmon of Northview Bank. Northview Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender, subject to credit approval. Find out more at northviewbank.com.
Hey, I'm Jason Rylander, the Jason that can grow a beard like a grown-up. And this is Paul Bunyan Country.
It's the Jason and Jason Show today, Durham and Rylander. What's the next sexy fish the internet's going to create?
Sheephead.
Yes. I would agree with that. Or big mouth buffalo.
Oh, buffalo. Because they're big. And you're talking, now you were talking two fish that are still considered rough fish, but are both native species.
Right.
So, yeah, that's, I mean, there's, I've been pretty lucky and got some really nice sheephead over the years, whether it's on Red Lake or Black Duck or down the Mississippi River. And you hook into one of those and you know it. It's fun. It's a lot of fun. Now, the intriguing part is you can go to Red Lake in the summer, and if you get into them, you can catch a sheephead every cast for as long as you want. And there's how many thousands of fish houses up there all winter, and you hear about two of them getting caught.
Right.
So that's a big mystery. Where are sheephead under the ice, and what are they doing, and why aren't they biting my lure, and where can I find them? That's my next mission.
Okay.
Well, you know what I always think of with redfish? They're a drum.
Yeah.
Or not a sheephead.
Yeah.
They're a drum, just like a redfish.
Yeah.
And people love to catch redfish, yet they catch a sheephead and they go, oh,
gross.
It wasn't a walleye.
Right.
What a riot to catch them.
Oh, yeah.
People pay thousands of dollars to go on trips to Florida and Texas and wherever to catch redfish.
Yes, they do.
And you can essentially do it here.
Yeah. Same family of fish. I think those redfish taste maybe a little better. But I have heard good things about sheephead, too.
I have, too. I haven't tried one. Have you tried one?
I have not.
Sounds like it's on the bucket list.
All right. Based on what you've seen, and when you've been out ice fishing, based on what you saw last fall and last year, how are we feeling about soft water season in Paul Bunyan Country?
How well, we with this tease of a winter we've had, I woke up this morning, it was 12 degrees, and I was chilled to the bone. I am definitely ready for spring. We've had such a soft winter, it turned me real soft.
Well, there's truth to that. I mean, there is a bodily function that occurs where you adapt to the environment around you. So, like, I think we've even talked about it before. Like, in the fall, when it hits 50 degrees, we put our jackets on, we bundle up. But then in the spring, when it hits 50 degrees, everybody's walking around in shorts because we're used to that cooler weather. But I think the interesting thing about this spring is that nobody knows. I was talking with Jeremy Anderson Jones, who you've had on the show numerous times. Jeremy guides in the Park Rapids area, and he and I have been friends forever. And just on the way up, we were chatting about it. Like, some people might think, okay, if the ice goes out a month early, which is a feasible estimate, right? Mm-hmm. If the ice goes out a month early, are the walleyes, for instance, going to spawn a month early? And, obviously you have water temperature playing a role, but you also have the photochromic period, not to mention you still have to go through that gestation period as a fish and be ready to spawn. So are we going to be that much more advanced? I don't think so. I mean, a little bit, probably. But it's not going to be like we're a month ahead. And I don't think you're just going to be able to go to use that as a gauge and say, like, well, today's June 9th. I need to fish this lake like it was July 9th. I don't think it's going to be like that. But I think it's going to be different, and to a point where there's a lot of anglers that are probably going to have to adjust what they do, and what's worked in the past might not work this year.
What's your vibe on water depths and drought? How are we looking?
Oh, for drought stuff?
We need moisture.
We need some rain, yeah, for sure. But the fish are still going to be there.
Well, just cross your fingers you can get your boat in.
Well, especially with your yacht.
It's a ship. You know, that's why I love high water years, because when you've got high water, you've just got so much more spawning territory for the fish. And those shallow water areas, you imagine like timber getting flooded and things like that, it protects them from predation, not just from predators that already live in the lake, but from anglers too, because they can't get to those fish as easily as they can when they're more exposed. So, yeah, but does that mean we're going to have a bad spawn? No, not necessarily. I mean,
one thing I think you got to look at too is, so I did a little research just because out of curiosity. If you go to the DNR website, most lakes will have, the DNR website will probably provide ice in and ice out dates. So Lake Bemidji, from my quick look, April 2nd is the record for the earliest ice out.
What year was that?
2012.
Okay.
I remember it because I was pan fishing in a t-shirt on April 7th. I have a picture with me and my son when he's a baby. But that's a month of open water. That's 5-6 weeks before walleye opener.
Yeah.
That's 5-6 weeks of
pounding panfish. Yeah.
Getting fished a lot harder than they typically would in the springtime. Now, granted, that's all very pre-spawn for them, so they're not quite as vulnerable. But, I mean, that's something to keep in mind, too, as anglers. Like, yeah, nothing wrong going out and getting a meal of fish for you and your family, but do you need to go get a meal of fish for you and your family every day after day?
Right.
Waiting for walleye season to open?
Right. You know, the other thing I think about with having a month before walleye opener, having a month of open water, is that those fish, I mean, they're going to spawn, they're going to recover, and we could have an outstanding opener. Mm-hmm. Not like the typical years where it's like Red Lake was on fire.
Yeah.
And, you know, all the smaller lakes were hit or miss. Yeah. It could be that we have a lot more consistency with success on opener. And I would love to see the enthusiasm come back for opener. I mean, I feel like in the last few years, like in our area in Parker Rapids, you used to see trailers in town all the time. Friday night, it was a celebration. People were out and about. They were excited. They were talking about fishing. Now you get to opener, you don't really see the boats, not until Memorial Day weekend. Mm-hmm. And that's when things really pick up and get busy.
Well, I even remember the little bait shop gas station in my hometown. When I was growing up, they were open all night.
Yeah.
That was a big thing.
Yeah.
Guys went out at midnight.
So yeah.
The station stayed open. The bait shop stayed open. They were open all night.
Yep, all night. Or at least open at like 4.
Right.
Some ridiculous time.
Right. Now it's just not.
Do you think it's because all the people that own the bait shops have enough experience doing it that they've determined, you know what, it wasn't worth it to do that?
I would imagine probably some of it, right?
Yeah, probably some of it.
I go back to the education of the anglers and the sophistication of our equipment and how much better and more effective and efficient we are at fishing. And what I mean by that is, everybody now knows, if you're a serious walleye angler, you figured out how to catch fish even in the hottest day in July, right?
I mean, in the middle of the day.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that need to be out there that day, it's not there anymore.
I would agree.
Plus, most anglers, at least this generation coming up, and I'd say from about your age back, it's not all about walleye anymore.
No.
It's about, yeah, there's...
It's about what's biting today. Right. And so, yeah, the walleye's still king, but he's not as unbeaten as he used to be, I don't think.
Right. Well, then I know a ton of people that fish quite often that they don't get too excited about opener because it's like... It's like going to the bar on St. Patrick's Day. It's packed. There's people everywhere.
Yes.
Yeah.
Most of them don't know what they're doing. So you got to, I'm just going to stay out of there, right?
Well, if enough people think that, in a couple of more openers, you can get out there and
get
you'll be able
to. Yeah.
Yep. Be plenty of room.
You read, you've foiled my plan, Kev.
It is amazing to me, and I've done this show a long time.
How long, Kev?
Okay, 35, 34, 35 years.
So just about as old as I am.
Okay, sure. And I just remember, you know, how tight-lipped most of my interviews were. It was tough. And there's just no fear in sharing knowledge anymore, which obviously, as a host of an outdoor show, is great.
Yeah.
And it sure hasn't meant that all the fish have been fished out either. So it's a much more wide open forum than it used to be, I think, and I love it.
Yeah, I think it's great too because I mean, when I was a kid, all I wanted was more information on fishing, and I hope that by your League of Extraordinary Anglers that are forthcoming, that it does give people an advantage, that it gives them confidence, that it gives them a reason to go out fishing, and their success, and that it makes them successful doing it. That would be like the greatest accolade ever.
Absolutely.
And I would say this new generation of guides who've grown up in a social media era are so much more media savvy than an old 60-year-old guy I was talking to in 1989, you know.
Right.
Yep.
Well, I think
not sure.
There's also, there's still some secrets, right? Everybody's got a few.
Of course.
For the most part, everybody's got access to such unbelievable information between lake maps and jump on YouTube and type in, how do I catch walleye in the spring? And up will pop 67 videos for you to watch leading up to opener. And you'll have a good knowledge base. And like Jason said, the biggest thing is to go out there with confidence and sure helps you catch fish, it seems like. You go out there it's just like anything you do. Do it with confidence, you usually do a little bit better at it.
You said 67 walleye videos. I bet it's 67,000.
Okay, sorry.
Should I look right now?
Somewhere between there.
What I also like about the media savvy guides and anglers and people I have on the show now is even when I ask a question I know they're not going to answer, they'll at least give me a 5-minute non-answer and fill some time. So that's cool, too.
I've been doing it every interview you've ever done to me, Kev.
All right. Anything else, guys, before we get into the most exciting part of the show?
Well, it doesn't show how many of these videos there are for how to catch a spring walleye, but boy, there's a lot of really great information. I see Bro and Nick Lindner and Larry Smith and Tom Boley. And, I mean, think about all the information you could just get from those five videos.
Oh, yeah.
Or four.
Mm-hmm. Probably all you need.
Probably.
Yeah.
Why did he ask us then?
All right, guys, are you ready for the Fast Five? Jason and Jason, Rylander and Durham, Fast Five.
Is this a competition?
Yeah, do we buzz in?
Yeah, what do I win?
No, no, you each get to answer.
Oh, okay.
And then discuss and argue as you see fit. This will be fun, I think.
Debate.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Fast Five. Who's with me?
Yeah. Question number one, Jason Ryland, where is a place you always wanted to fish but haven't been able to yet?
Got to do Alaska, got to do Panama. There's some local guys that have gone up and done it, and I want to go up to the Arctic, catch those giant lake trout, great air.
Okay.
Plumber's Lodge, I would love to do that trip.
Jason Durham, place you've always wanted to fish but have not yet.
El Salto, Mexico. I'd want to go fish the big largemouth down there.
You can catch bass in Park Rapids. Why would you travel thousands of miles to catch
Mexican
stupid bass go catch a species you can't catch in your backyard.
They're different.
You're an idiot.
This is quality radio right here, ladies and gentlemen. Question number two. We'll start with Tenacious D on this one. I'm sure he's, I know what he's going to say, but what the heck? This will be fun. Which Jason's farts are the worst?
Why do you put me on the spot like that?
Because it's fun.
I mean, I would love to say it's Jason Rylander's because, I mean, just...
You'd just like to
his overall that. Stink in general. I mean, you would
but
think.
Let's look at Jason's daily diet. He starts his morning off with 6 to 12 hard-boiled eggs, and that's about all I have to... I mean, we know, right?
Washed down with a liter of... 2 liter of Coke Zero.
Coke Zero.
Wow.
Followed by a midday snack of mouth mixing in his fridge, which was probably some mayo, maybe a piece of ham, some mustard, some sort of chunk cheese.
Wrong. I would never mouth mix mayo. That doesn't even make sense.
Oh.
Eggs are amazing. Mayo came straight from the devil.
Okay.
Deviled eggs? That's why there's mayo in there.
All right. So do we both? Are we both agreeing that Jason Durham's has the stinkiest farts between the two Jasons?
Diet is awful.
But I will say,
you just got a fart-friendly diet.
Around the general public, I am... very courteous.
Just not around him.
Around you, I am entirely uncouth.
I'm very sneaky with my farts.
See, I just thought that was your general overall smell.
Now, do you want to, Beans, you're in here together, do you want to, put the onus on another one of the famous Jasons in the fishing world?
Well, I mean...
Mitchell's too nice a guy.
I couldn't throw him under the bus. Mm-mm. Though he does eat like once every 5 days, and then it's got to be just awful after that.
I respect him too much. But I bet.
Yeah. I mean, you just look at him and you think that got to smell bad. But I won't say anything bad. I got too much love for him.
All right. Question number three. Durham is like the peanut butter eater of peanut butter eaters. But we'll start with you on this one, Rylander. Jif or Skippy?
As long as it's crunchy, doesn't matter.
Get out of this room. Leave right now. Leave. You would put crunchy peanut butter on a piece of bread.
100%.
This is
I need
right.
the texture. I need the texture. It's amazing. It's peanuts. Butter comes from peanuts. Peanuts are crunchy.
Put some red pepper flakes in there.
No.
What?
Honey, now you're diluting the peanut butter taste. That doesn't even make sense. Then
two,
it's not peanut butter.
Three slices of bread, giant layers of peanut butter, and some honey, and a giant ice cold glass of milk. That's how peanut butter
you
should be eaten.
You didn't even mention jelly.
No, honey. Peanut butter honey guy.
I can't believe we're even friends.
Well, it's nice. I don't have to worry about you eating my peanut butter at my house.
All right.
No,
so,
just your honey.
So for the record, Rylander doesn't care as long as it's crunchy.
Crunchy.
And clearly Durham wants it creamy.
No, actually, I'll take both.
Okay. But I'm still wanting to know.
You put creamy on a sandwich. You put crunchy on the other things.
I didn't know you put peanut butter on other things.
Jason's
bananas?
A teacher. He can't afford Skippy or Jif, so he probably doesn't even know the difference.
I buy the
whatever the value brand is.
I don't know what it is. It doesn't have a label on it. The ones that the labels fall off of, that's what I can afford.
Wow.
It's one. It's like what they encourage people to do when they buy an engagement ring, right? It's what is it? Three months' wages. That's what it is for peanut butter for me as a teacher. 3 months' wages, I can buy a jar.
So no Jif or Skippy endorsement?
Okay, here's the deal. Smucker's Original is the way to go. And the crunchy, you put that on your thin sliced salami and on your bananas.
Never had Smucker's peanut butter. I didn't even know they made that. I thought they were just the jelly guys.
When you go to Walmart, it's on the top shelf.
Or you go the secret of Bemidji is you go to Harmony Co-op and you go to that machine and you push the button and it grinds peanuts and puts it into a jar for you. That is top notch.
Unless you lay under it, then it puts it right in your mouth.
Ooh.
That's why Jason can't get that anymore.
That's why I've been kicked out. They have my picture behind the counter.
Well, go in with your eel pout disguise and maybe they'll let you.
This is a good idea.
Get your eel pout covered in peanut butter.
Question. You got eel pout in my peanut butter. You got peanut butter on my eel pout.
Question number four. Start with Jason D this time. What is the worst fish to eat?
I mean, bullheads have to be right up there, but I mean, some people like bullheads. And I got a friend who goes out with his grandfather and they catch a bunch of bullheads and they put them on a cookie sheet, cover them with blackened seasoning, and then they smoke them. Well, that doesn't sound so bad.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
But is there a fish I don't like to eat? Not freshwater, but I mean, saltwater, not a fish, but I'm not a real big shellfish guy. I don't like.
Okay. Mm-mm. So you're not dining at the seafood restaurants generally?
No.
Okay. No, I like seafood. I like most freshwater. I'd probably agree with you on the bullhead side. But one type of fish that I can't stand, and I've warned my wife about divorce about this, but if she brought home a can of tuna and opened it up anywhere in our house, I'm done. It's it. We're over. I cannot. That canned tuna is I can't do it. I can't smell it. I don't even want to know what it tastes like. I'd have to be starving to death.
You know what surprises me is how many people base their entire tuna experience upon canned tuna that have never had a seared ahi tuna steak before and don't know what that's like.
Because that's good.
That is unbelievable.
Raw tuna, poke, give it all to me. I love all of that.
Yeah.
But whatever they do to put it in the can, no, it's wrong. We should fight legislation and ban it.
Fight them. Like physically fight? Or
punch people.
I always imagine you fighting like the little leprechaun guy on the Fighting Irish logo. Where
Yeah,
like you're...
That's how I fight about
too. Back in the
day. It's the only thing I really fight about.
I mean,
about
you went and got the haircut for it today.
I know.
You look like the Irish guy.
You and Kev both aren't in the spot to start making fun of my haircut.
I wasn't about to.
You can start fighting.
I'm jealous. I'm jealous of you.
Sorry for looping you in with his meanness.
It's because we don't have hair. We get haircuts every day. We just don't have to actually go.
That's right. All right. Question number five. You already argued about this off the air, so here we go. Pancakes or waffles?
I'm seething right now, waiting to hear his answer because he's
waffles.
Wrong.
It's waffles.
You're wrong.
The waffles. They have pockets for butter and syrup. They're also, well, if they get soggy, then you have to cut them up. But at some point, usually you could pick them up and just eat them.
That's not true. Not if you have the butter and syrup in there.
Right. But they have pockets. They hold them.
My biggest treat. Let's say I'm making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, okay? I make sure the peanut butter touches all...
creamy peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Yes. Yeah, okay. All edges evenly.
Mm-hmm.
It's got an even distribution. The ratios are so important when it comes to eating. And I just don't think with a waffle you get that consistency.
Mm. The ratios are a boatload of butter and just the right amount of syrup.
No, you put peanut butter on a pancake and you roll that thing up. And you eat it like an enchilada.
So a crepe?
No. Mm. Thicker. Like a pancake.
Lego my ego, baby.
Okay, now that brings me to a different topic, though. Egos, that's a different ball game.
They're a waffle.
They are, but really they're a catalyst for experimentation. Have you ever put a hamburger on between two Eggo waffles?
No, but a chicken...
Yep.
Piece of chicken wood.
That
chicken.
Too.
Sounds good.
Chicken. Ever done tacos?
Chicken is a thing. No, I eat chips.
Yeah, try an Eggo waffle.
No.
What?
It's butter and syrup. Cut them off, Kev. Get out of here.
All right. This is not part of the Fast Five, but I don't know. This might start another argument. Prediction on when the ice will go out.
Are we talking Lake Bemidji?
Let's go to Lake Bemidji. Yeah.
I'm thinking we're going to break that April 2nd record. I'm going to go with March 26th.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You know, I don't drive past Lake Bemidji every day, so I don't get a real accurate feel for the nuances of the thaw. Mm-hmm. All I can go off is Lake Beltane that I drive past every morning on the way to work. And we've got a warm-up coming at the beginning of next week, like Tuesday, I think. It's supposed
Monday,
to be
Monday,
in
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Maybe a fourth day thrown in there. I think by the end of that, the bay on Beltane will be ice-free.
Okay.
It's already pulled out probably 15 feet from the shoreline on the north side, and big chunks are breaking off. A giant crack went down the middle of a bay the other day. I think it's happening faster than we realize. Well, even when we got these cold temps the other night and it was below zero, I thought that would solidify everything, kind of rejuvenate the safeness of it. And no, there was areas with open water that they became more open.
Okay.
Weird year.
It definitely has been a weird year.
So we'll have to wait and see, and I'll be right on that one too then.
Well, so I'll say March 25th then.
Price is Right rules?
Yep. Exactly.
All right, guys, it was great having you in. Jason Rylander, Jason Durham, and Jason Durham again in costume. You've got to check the social. You really do need to check the social. Guys, we have to do this way more often because this is, I could just sit back and this is so much fun. It's like the easiest interview ever.
We've invited you to infiltrate our lives and just follow us around day to day, but I don't know why he hasn't taken us up on that.
No. You know, I can only stand so much of heaven at one time. So,
I'm sure. Wow, is he smooth.
That is, I'm sure, is exactly
That's a bunch of baloney. No,
great answer, though.
Yeah, really good.
But we do have to do this more frequently. It is too good. Guys, thanks for being here. It was so awesome.
Thank you, Kev. Paul Bunyan Country! Country!